welcome to another bi-weekly episode of the Book Echoes podcast, the podcast on all things producing quality children's and young adult literature. I'm YA author Connie B. Dowell, and today I have a wonderful interview for you with author copywriting guru Brian Meeks. And he talks about the importance of copywriting skill for authors and his new book, Mastering Amazon Descriptions. It's a great listen, as he explains not just the value of copywriting skill, but the difference between copywriting and prose writing, and how authors have to change the way they write to get that particular skill down. It's also just a fun, chatty interview. Brian is very generous with his time, and we went on for about an hour just talking about writing and copywriting, and I hope you enjoy it. In my own update, since last time I talked to you guys, I had my booth at Comic Palooza here in Houston, and it was quite an experience. I know that Comic Palooza attendance for 2018 was over 52,000 people. I don't know how many there were this year, but it did seem like quite a lot. It was pretty intense. It went for 3 days. I did not go for the third day. I stayed home for Mother's Day, and I kind of called it a night early on the Friday and Saturday as well, because I've got small kids. I know other people with booths were staying basically until the floor closed, but I knew my limits and what I needed for my own family. And so that's what I did. And it's not exactly a warm market for young adult historical mystery. Probably better for other genres of young adult, but I did want to try doing a really big show this year, and learning what I could learn from doing that. And I'm actually going to tell you guys a little bit more about that next time. One, because this is a pretty long interview and the episode is quite long enough without me blathering on here in the introduction, but also because I'm going to have an episode next time, so in the next 2 weeks, that's just me. And I'll discuss that a little bit more then. And after that, I will have some time to get back to recording interviews. I won't really be able to do that until June because I am getting Dead Man's Jazz out the door to my copy editor, and I've got to focus on that. So next time the episode will be just me, and the time after that we will have a brand new author on for you guys to listen to and learn from. But I hope you learn a little bit from my Comic Palooza experience as I describe it next fortnight. But for now, let's launch into the huge and chatty interview with Brian Meeks. All right, well, welcome to Book Echoes, the podcast, all things children's and young adult literature. Today, I've got on the podcast Brian Meeks, author, copywriting guru extraordinaire. So welcome, Brian.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. It's always fun to talk about the book business.
Yeah, always fun to talk about the book business. And this is maybe a little bit more more marketing heavy than some of the interviews I've done so far. So Brian's written a number of, like, an impressive number of books in general, some for adults, some YA, and some author copywriting focused, which I've read both of those and found them really helpful. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your books?
Absolutely. I got started as an author. Well, I got started as a writer January 2nd, 2010, where I was bored. I was a football game. It was a bowl game I wanted to watch, but didn't kick off for a few hours. I was just zipping around the internet. I found a site called Blogger. I wrote a blog post that I thought was kind of funny. And at that point in my life, I wasn't into writing, but I was bored and needed to kill time. So I did. And that post was well received. got a lot of feedback. People thought it was funny. And so I decided to blog the next day. I just kept blogging and blogged every day from January 2nd, 2010 through March 26th, 2016. I didn't miss a day. And during that time, I wrote 7 novels as blog posts, meaning I read a chapter, not every day, but I just keep adding to the story through my blog. And one of those books was a YA called Secret Doors, which is sort of a Harry Potter-esque adventure. But instead of owls, my book has not one, but 2 giant guinea pigs in it. So obviously it's better because everyone loves a giant guinea pig and they talk. And so that was actually my 5th book I wrote. 4 mysteries, then the YA Secret Doors, and that was quite a few years ago now, back in 2012, and it's 19. I then later on wrote a young adult called Killing Hemingway, which is about a child genius growing up in 3 acts, when he's in 6, and then when he's 12, and then when he's 18. And so I kind of dipped my toes into the YA and really like it, but I don't know that I'm as good at the YA as maybe some of the other genres I write in. Anyway, that led to wanting to make a living. And because my background is data analytics, I was an analyst at an insurance company, I dug into AMS ads. My skill, understanding the way changes impact one's sales, that led me to then have success with AMS ads, and then I wrote Mastering Amazon Ads. That then, because of the feedback from the folks in my group, led to writing Mastering Amazon Descriptions. And that's sort of the key point that I want to get across to people, is you can have a really good book, but if your description is just a block of text saying this is what's in the book, that is not going to get as many people enticed to want to read your book as proper copywriting. And that's what I talk about in Mastering Amazon Descriptions, is the art of using those handful of words in your Amazon description, or it could be any description, say on Kobo or any others. And that's how you get people hooked. So that was kind of my evolution. I started out in fiction and then wrote some nonfiction. I've written 3 books with Honoré Quarter about the book business. And I really like talking with authors. We're a fun bunch.
Well, I think we are a fun bunch. That's a really good point. A lot of us, we come from writing a great big novel or a picture book, and the format and how things are written is very different from copywriting.
That is absolutely true. Prose versus copywriting, they are both their own art forms. Somebody that is a great painter isn't necessarily going to be able to do sculpture in marble. They're different skill sets. They can be just as beautiful. You can look at a statue and say, that's amazing. I used to live in Washington, D.C., and along the mall, there is the Hirshhorn Sculpture Gallery. And it's an outdoor gallery, and most people don't know it exists. Most people don't even see it because it's below surface level. There's a tiny wall, and if you go up and look over the wall, you can go down these steps, there's this amazing sculpture garden. And they've got a ballerina by Degas. They've got Matisse's 4 backs, which he did in the 20s. They've got Rodin's The Murders of Calais. I think they've got 3 Rodins. And so these are amazing sculptures that you can walk by every day. People that live in D.C. do. They walk by. They never notice that this secret little free outdoor museum is right there. I got off on a tangent there, but the point is, I love sculpture. I was also a docent in the Corcoran Gallery, and paintings there are absolutely incredible. And so they're both beautiful in their own way. It's the same way with writing. you can have beautiful prose that you're reading it and you get to that. My favorite thing about writing, bar none, is when I'm reading a book and there's a sentence and it's so good, it makes me stop reading, set the book down, and just think about it. That is beautiful prose, when it hooks you so hard. I remember one, and I don't remember the author, but it was in an interview. It was a British author, and he said, he was asked, he was in his 60s, and he was an author of Summer Now. He was asked, what will the day like be when you decide that you're done writing? And he said, on that day, I will spiral into a pit of despair so profound as to be indistinguishable from perfect bliss. And, you know, again, this is a writer that's sort of the typical negative, woe is me thing. And it was brilliant writing. And it made me simultaneously love the skill of the writer and hate the person, because, you know, we don't need to be drunken, miserable people. We can write and be happy. Mm-hmm. But it was a beautifully crafted bit of phrasing. And so that's prose. That's what prose can do for you. You can read prose and be moved to where it stops you in your tracks. And I read that quote maybe 5 years ago, and it's still with me today. Copywriting can do the same thing. Once you start to really understand its brilliance. I live on the Las Vegas Strip, and just across the street, there's a billboard. And the billboard says, in quotes, trust me, comma, you can sing, end quote, dash, alcohol. That is funny copyright, and it's a billboard over a liquor store. Trust me, you can sing, signed alcohol. That is funny. It stays with you. And most authors, and I can't speak for all of your listeners, but I think a lot of them will, if you ask them, would say the thing they like least about the book business is writing that description so they can publish. I don't know. How do you feel about it? Do you dread writing the description? Maybe you don't care. You just bang it out. Maybe you love it. How do you feel?
Yeah, I've never been terribly averse to it. Mm-hmm. I think though, the first couple of times I tried to write a description, or I tried to do something similar and write a query to an agent, that was pretty painful.
So that's the same. That's a great example. If there's those out there that are trying to get an agent or want a traditional deal, you still, copywriting has the power to help in that regard. I have an example. There's a gentleman that lives in this building, and he's a professional photographer. He does work for various casino entertainment corporations all up and down the strip. There was one job, and it was a 2-week thing that was done periodically throughout the year by this one casino entertainment company, and he had tried for it a couple of times and had never landed the job. And I said, you know what? Let me write your submission, because it required the form, and it required some bio stuff. And it was the bio that I focused on. And so we talked, and over about 20 minutes, you know, I said, what are the pain points for these people hiring photographer. We discussed that. And then I wrote the bio, and 2 days later, he got the job. Now, this was a $100,000 2-week job. That's a lot of money to make in 14 days. And the difference between him getting it and not getting it was the 20 minutes I spent doing the copyright. And so it's incredibly powerful. And that was incredibly satisfying. May I tell you the story of the copywriting miracle?
Okay, sure.
Okay, it was a copywriting miracle. I, in my book, Mastering Amazon Descriptions, it's come out a few weeks ago. It'll probably be a few months by the time this airs. But I have a group on Facebook, and a reader of the new book, she put up a post. And she did it in proper copywriting, which is what I encourage in the book, is that if you're going to try to learn this skill, use it all the time. So she put up a post. She said something to the effect of, I started reading the book. It hooked me immediately. I couldn't stop until I got to chapter 43, and then I couldn't go on. I was hooked. It was brilliant. And she said, I needed a link. So I went to chapter 43. I found out which book she was talking about, because there's over 40, or there's actually 40 descriptions that I've rewritten, that I give them before, which is what the author did, and then we rewrite them as examples. And so, but there's more than that chapters in the book. So I had to go to 43, find out which book it was. And then I looked it up and I sent her the link. And she wrote back, and like 2 minutes later, she said, I bought the book. And she said, what's amazing is, in my entire life, I have never owned a cookbook. I have never wanted a cookbook. And I read that description that you wrote in Mastering Amazon Description about this cookbook, and I couldn't go on until I bought it. So my copywriting, and even though that wasn't the goal, I mean, the goal of the book is to teach you, the author, how to do copywriting, but it was such good copywriting that this reader, who was not in the market for a book, bought her first ever cookbook. And that's incredibly satisfying for me, as the person who wrote the copy, that I so wielded the power of copywriting that I hooked the person who didn't even want it. Now, for your readers, there are people that are looking for children. They just finished up Click Clack Move, and they need to buy something else. And so they're already somewhat engaged in the process of finding a book. So they're much more likely to be converted than a person that doesn't want a cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you use proper copywriting, you will get more people to decide to give your book a try. And that's the point of the book and the point of this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, that is impressive copywriting and marketing skill to take someone who was not even remotely looking and turn them into a buyer. Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
I don't know if you have other questions. I just tend to just go on and on. So if you need to interrupt me, just do so.
That's okay. We'll just keep going if you've got more to say.
Well, I wanted to talk about some of the art of copywriting.
Oh, yes. I'd like to hear a little bit, especially about how it's different from other kinds of writing.
Yes, and let's focus on that. So with prose, you may choose in a paragraph to add in a giant run-on sentence. Just, even though you know you're not supposed to have run-on sentences, and your eighth grade English teacher would give use red ink on it, there may be a point in your novel where the giant run-on sentence fits the music of the story. Because in prose, there's rhythm, there's cadence, there's more than just the words. And maybe a character is talking to another character, and for whatever reason, she goes on an eloquent rant that's a big, long run-on sentence, and then she pauses, and there's a three-word sentence after that that sort of is the symbol or the punctuation, and it's beautiful. Well, there's all different stylistic ways to do prose that keep the reader hooked and enjoying the narrative, enjoying the pictures. You're painting a picture with prose. With copywriting, you need to understand that we live in an age where our attention spans have been shattered by Facebook, by social media. We are spending probably too much time each day on Facebook looking at pictures of dating, or I look at and hitting like, and people putting a picture of their lunch and like that, and we comment and these things, and then we put up a picture of our lunch. And it's not enough to put up a picture of our lunch. We then want to go back and see if anybody liked our lunch. Because we get that little, I think it's, is it dopamine?
Yeah.
The dopamine hit every time, oh, 17 people liked my lunch. And it feels good. Well, because of that, yeah, Pinterest and Instagram, I mean, Instagram is all just pictures and loving and like, mm-hmm. And it's just like a drug. And dopamine is, it's a drug versus. So because of that, we as a species have lost to some degree the ability to sit still and focus on one thing. Well, the irony of this is we're trying to sell books. And people buy books because when they sit down and open up the Kindle or crack the actual cover of a physical book, they're going to spend an hour, 2 hours, maybe an entire afternoon, and their mind is going to turn everything off but the story. And we need that. Well, when people are shopping for books, they're not there yet. Their brains are still in the I need instant gratification mode. They don't have the patience to look at a description that's too long, giant blocks of text, and their eyes just glaze over. As an example, have any of your listeners ever been on Facebook and seen a post that was 20 lines long in a giant block of text? And maybe the first line indicates the post is going to be about their new puppy. And maybe you like new puppies. And maybe there's a picture of the puppy. So you click like, but you didn't read the whole thing. Copywriting is the art of getting people to read from the start to the finish. And I've studied this in the 20 books to 50K group. I used to post quite a lot, and I would get maybe 50 people that would like my post. And 15 comments, people would say, oh, great point, thank you, that was helpful, stuff like that. When I started using copywriting, I could write a post in 20 books to 50K that would be between 750 and 1,500 words. I mean, that's a massive post for
impressive.
And those posts typically get between 500 and 750 people liking them and 300 comments. Mm. So my smaller posts, a couple hundred words, 50 likes, 15 comments, these massive, you know, just incredibly lengthy posts, getting 10 times, 15 times the results because I hook them. And so it starts out, and you want to do this on your description. It starts off with, is your opening line a hook? Does it pull people in so that they want to read your YA, read your story? And so that's different than prose. You don't want to start off with an elegant sentence. You want something short, maybe 4 to 6 words. And the next line is short too. And the third one. And then maybe you have a paragraph of 2 or 3 lines. Then maybe another short one, another paragraph. And then you bring the reader in with something along the lines of, you'll like this story because. And the reason you do that is because instantly, now, and free are the 5 most powerful words in copyright. We have been programmed over years and years of copywriters using those words that it triggers something in us on a very deep level where we react. So if it says, you'll love this YA adventure because everyone enjoys guinea pigs on a treasure hunt, and really, I see guinea pigs out there. The you and the because, it doesn't matter what comes after the because. We've been programmed that because is the validation. Mm-hmm. I'm going to love it. And there's a because. Doesn't matter what comes out. And this has actually been proven in research that the stuff that comes after the because doesn't increase the effectiveness of the copy. It's you get to that because and they're already hooked. And then you want to finish with a call to action, which some people hate those. I like to use get it now. People don't really read the call to action. It's there. It's just sort of a Pavlovian response where that's the dinner bell that is getting the dog to salivate is to get it now. That's the thing. And so that's the basics of a description. And it works. It absolutely works. There's a wonderful children's author who I don't know if I should give her name. I should have asked her before I came on the show. But she has been through, she's read my books, we've talked at length. She has used this copywriting for her children's books, and she's on pace to do 6 figures this year. And she was doing less than 5 figures in a year. So, I mean, it's
impressive.
Yeah, it's incredibly powerful how much she has changed her life by using AMS ads and copyright, because it does matter. So, that was a long answer, but it's, it is a different stylistically way to approach writing.
Mm-hmm. And it's good to know that this is something that not only can work, but does work for those of us who write for a younger audience. I think a lot of children's and YA writers are maybe more resistant to learning about copywriting, learning about marketing in general, because we feel such a, not a burden, but like both a burden and a blessing in writing for people who are just beginning to love reading. That it's more powerful to write things and sell. There's a bigger responsibility when you write for children.
I absolutely agree. But when you get to the point that your book is done and you're looking at your book and you're saying to yourself, this is a wonderful story. The young person that picks up my book is going to develop a love of reading because they've read my story of guinea pigs on an adventure. Then don't you owe it to yourself to try to sell as many copies as possible, not because of the money. And the money's great because that helps you afford to write more books.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you gave away all of your money because you're being altruistic, if the book is going to make a child love to read, then it's almost a crime not to do the best possible job you can of selling it. And this is not to say, I mean, copywriting can be used for evil. Absolutely. Look at political advertising. I mean, that's a great example where people are swayed by the power of copywriting. It can absolutely be used for evil. But, it's a kitchen knife can be used to cut up veggies so that you can make a salad or in your guinea pig. I love guinea pig. I don't even own a guinea pig. I just think this is the point is, you can cut out veggies for your guinea pig and make your guinea pig happy. You can use that same kitchen knife to go on a stabbing spree.
Mm-hmm.
The knife isn't the problem. And so if people are resistant to use copywriting because they feel like it's cheating, no, it's just, you've got a great thing. You need to get the person to understand how wonderful this book is so that they can enjoy it. Don't you want people to enjoy your books? And if you only want them to enjoy it if they read it, if they bought it despite the bad description, well, that just is counterintuitive to me.
Yeah, it's just shooting yourself and your work in the foot and all of the wonderful things your work could bring to a child or a teen.
Exactly. And I mean, I think a perfect example is, I'm guessing many of your listeners have read some or all of the Harry Potter books. Have you read the Harry Potter books?
A zillion times.
A zillion times. I have read them each once, but when I was standing in line for at midnight for book six at the Barnes and Nobles in Bethesda, Maryland, I was in line with this woman. She's 12. This girl and her father. And I was asked, are you excited about book six? Oh, yes. She was very excited. And I said, and you've read all the books leading up to it? Oh, yes. I've read book one 15 times. I've read book two 17 times. I've read book three 22 times. It was my favorite. Book four, I've only read 12 times. And so, wow. I mean, the good J.K. Rowling has done as far as showing people, I mean, hundreds of millions of young people and then hundreds of millions of adults, because I started reading Harry Potter, I was in my 30s when I discovered Harry Potter. And I already loved reading, but it was still such a magical adventure. She has done a great thing. She deserves her $1 billion. But even if she only sold $100 worth, and I was one of the people that bought the books, I'm still thankful because it was such an amazing adventure. And so now I don't know what the copywriting's like on her books. And it may be that when you get to the point that you sold $1 billion worth of books, copywriting doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But it may not either. I don't know. I do know that my descriptions for my books, because I do pay-per-click advertising on AMS, it would take 30 clicks that I'm paying for to get one new reader.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a reader who is either downloading the book in Kindle Unlimited, where they're not paying for it because they subscribe, or actually buying the book. 30 clicks. When I first started doing copywriting, it got down to 1 in 10 to 1 in 12.
That's a good ratio.
Yes, you don't need to be a math genius to know that if I asked any of your listeners, would you rather pay 25 cents a click 30 times or 10 times to get a sale? I mean, that's not even math. That's just common sense.
Mm-hmm.
I then, because I started studying copywriting and improved, later rewrote my description again and got it down to 1 in 8. So I thought I had a good description at 1 in 30. It was a couple blocks of text. It was a synopsis. I changed it to proper copyright and got it to 1 in 10 and 1 in 12. And then I changed it again. And can I read you that description? Because
sure.
I think it's a good example of what I mean by copywriting. Let's go there. Bring it up. I should have this ready. Put on my ad. There we go. So now this is for Henry Wood Detective Agency. First line, Henry knew one thing. Then there's an ellipsis. Blank line, dames were trouble. Another blank line, would this client be the exception? Those are the three lines that are above the fold. Now, what I want you to understand, there's several things going on here. Henry knew one thing, dot, dot, dot. Now, in copywriting, I frequently misuse the ellipses. And that's fine. I also sometimes misuse capitalization because I want a word to stand out. All's fair in copywriting. If it helps you keep a person hooked or make a stronger point, you can take some liberties. So the point is, the very first line is short, four words. Henry knew one thing. If you look at the W in knew, and your eyes focus on the W, it is so short that your peripheral vision reads the whole thing as if it were just one word. And I do that by design because I want the person to be hooked on that first line right out of the gate. The the goal of the first line, and this is Sugarman. Joseph Sugarman wrote a book called Gagne. It is considered one of the finest tomes on copywriting ever written, and he preaches throughout the book, the goal of the first line of any ad copy is to get them to the second line. That's what I'm trying to do. And nobody is going to read Henry knew one thing, dot, 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 and stop. It's just, you have to go on to the next line. It's so short, it's not much of a commitment. And the next line is, dames were trouble. Now, this does several things. My cover, and I realize your listeners can't see it, but my cover is an Art Deco, sort of bright colors. It speaks to being a period history piece. The word dames also speaks to being a period piece because nobody uses the word dame anymore unless it's Dame Judi Dench. So the point is it's doing several things. Henry knew one thing, dames were trouble. Well, now we've got, that's a bit of a hook too, because why is there a woman that he considers to be trouble? And then the next line is, would this client be the exception? So I've set the stage. Now, hopefully, they will click read more. So now I'm going to read the whole thing from the top, and I use a lot of blank lines to set things off. It makes the writing seem less weighty. There aren't any massive paragraphs. My longest paragraph is 2 lines and 3 words in the third line. So let's start from the top. Henry knew one thing. Dames were trouble. Would this client be the exception? She walked in, sat down, crossed her legs, and asked for a light. Boy, could she cross a leg. Before the woman had told him why she needed a detective, Henry wondered if she was playing. It was something about her. The red lips and smoldering eyes were just a little too perfect. She knew how to get her way. And the dress, dot, dot, dot. She wore a Dior dress that would make an hourglass self-conscious. Was it the damsel in distress act? This was the second one he'd seen this week. Something wasn't adding up. 1955 was going to be an interesting year. You'll love this noir mystery with a twist because everyone loves a broken detective trying to do what's right. Get it now. That description, it just keeps them hooked. Mm-hmm. It paints a picture. And at no point during the description do I give a synopsis of what the book is about. And this converts better than even the copywriting one where I had more details about what's going on in the story. I don't mention Tommy the Knife, the antagonist. I don't mention the accountant, the missing ledger, all of these things that are key elements of the book that as authors, we tend to want to pack those into our description. But all you're doing is ruining the mystery and intrigue. And you're giving the person a reason not to need to buy the book. And so we want to hint at what might happen, not tell them what will happen. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's really crucial to think about. Is that you want to storytellers want to tell story, but even in that description, that very very pared down description you just read to us, it's you don't venture into synopsis territory, but you're doing a lot of that, of the storytelling work that authors focus on, especially for their first pages. Hook that reader, make them want to go on, set the tone. You don't tell the whole thing.
Exactly. And so if your listeners can think in those terms and try to get them just a toe in the water, then they're going to have to buy the book. And that's what I did with the, I feel like I should read description chapter 43 since I talked about the copywriting miracle. Do you mind if I read one more?
Oh, no, then that would actually be a really helpful one to hear a nonfiction example and a more.
Yeah. Let's do that. Let's go find chapter 43. Okay. Okay, so the book is by Rachel Richards. The title, The 7-Day Ketogenic Diet Meal Plan, Volume 1, Price $4.99. This is in Health, Fitness, and Diet. And I'm not going to read her description because it is massive. Mm-hmm. So the original one. But my description, I will read the analysis. In a nonfiction, one needs to go a bit longer than fiction because consumers are looking for facts about mm-hmm. what's in the book. But one can overdo it. The original description got to be a bit long. I started to tire while reading it. And those who know me know that I get snarky and I tend to joke around a lot. But that's an important thing to consider. If you're reading your description and at any point maybe you've got a character name and you've got a first and last name, but the last name is some long Russian name that maybe has six syllables and is a challenge to pronounce, if you think it's possible your potential reader may get stuck on one of the words to where they're reading along, they're hooked, and then they stop and they're trying to figure out how do you say that, that's a bad thing. You want to try to maybe take the last name off and just use the first name. So that's something to consider. Well, in this one, the original went on for too long and I got fatigued. I wanted to get to the point where I was to that call to action so I could make my decision. Now, my version. First line, do you hate diets? Question. Weight loss can be yummy. Dot, dot, dot. Then another ellipsis at the beginning, which is, again, an incorrect use of the ellipse. If you know the secrets of ketogenic eating, so I'm going to read from the top. Do you hate diets? Weight loss can be yummy. If you know the secrets of ketogenic eating, don't sacrifice taste for a healthy diet. A ketogenic diet forces your body to burn fat as the primary source of energy. What is the ketogenic diet? Your body uses what you eat to give you energy. Carbohydrates raise your blood sugar levels, and your body reacts by producing insulin to deal with it. Why is that bad? Insulin helps change glucose to fat. What if your body learned to fuel itself by burning fat? A ketogenic diet is designed to make your body burn fat instead of carbohydrates. It is comprised mainly of high-fat diets with low-carb foods and normal levels of protein. Carbohydrates are kept below 60 grams and preferably around 20 to 40 gram level on a daily basis. Don't feel like you have to give up your favorite foods. With recipes like the low-carb peanut butter cookies or chocolate mousse, you can still feed your sweet tooth without feeling guilty. Inside this book are the following recipes of meals, and then I list breakfast 7, lunch 7, snacks 14, dinner 7. You'll love the results because watching the weight come off without hating what you're eating makes all the difference in the world. Get it now. And so there's a lot of hooks in there. There's addressing the issues that people have with dieting. Everybody hates diets. I myself have lost 30 pounds in the last 4 months. I didn't read this book, but I'm on the ketogenic diet. And so that helped me as the writer of this description focus in on the important aspects. But here, again, I keep using questions and I have pacing. And again, it worked. It absolutely sold that one copy of the book. And I'm sure that the Rachel Richards results are improved from the original one, which was just big block paragraph after big block paragraph. There was too much, and I think she probably lost lots of people on
the
route.
Yeah. So it was good to hear a nonfiction example. I think nonfiction writers are also kind of prone to go on in description and try to describe everything that's in the book and your credentials and why you're qualified to give this information.
Yeah, and it is something that I understand that. I mm-hmm. absolutely get that. But if there's 8 great things in this book, you don't need to mention 8. Mm-hmm. You could bulletproof 3 of them, the 3 best things. And then, or maybe 4 best things, and then the 5th bulletproof is, and many more, something like that. So that you're not just making it this giant slog of stuff. You put in the 3 or 4 that you believe will have the biggest draw to your potential readers, mm-hmm. and then the other ones that they will likely find valuable they don't need to be in the description though. You know, that's, it's, this is what you're getting, but there's, you're not just getting those, you're getting and many more things. So I do admit that nonfiction needs to be a little bit longer. I think I only did maybe one nonfiction in the book, and that's too, I should have done more, and maybe I will do more in the future and, you know, put up a volume two or something like that. I don't know, but the realities are mastering Amazon descriptions will improve your copywriting, which will help fiction sales. It will help nonfiction sales. If you happen to be somebody selling lawnmowers, it'll help lawnmowers, wedding dresses, you know, baby clothes. It doesn't matter that the examples are mostly fiction. It's the concepts of of hooks and the weight of the description and all of that that really matters as far as getting people to try your product. So.
Yeah.
I could have probably done better with more nonfiction, but I just, mostly the people that were asking for help were fiction. So.
Yeah, and it's, there's a greater barrier to entry for fiction, or barrier to entry for like getting someone to read fiction. Nonfiction readers tend to know what they're looking for.
Yeah, that's a little more. They're going to lose weight, and they've heard about the ketogenic diet, so they're already dialed in.
Yeah, they're more primed.
Doing a search like that, whereas a fiction reader might just want type adventure, and that could be a science fiction adventure. Then it could be fantasy. It could be a Harry Potter type adventure. So that they're painting with a much broader stroke, and it's your job. When they see the cover, because that's how a lot of people are going to get to your description. You may have written some ad copy on your AMS ad or Facebook ad that got them to click, but the chances are most people click because the cover was really striking. And even if you did have good copy that got them there, once they're to your description, all of the benefit of the beautiful cover, the benefit of good ad copy, that's gone. That's not closing the deal. What's going to close the deal is the description copy. And so it's like starting over. Now, got them to this point. It's a new race now. We need to use the copy rating to get them over the hump.
Yeah. So that was great. It was a great intro to your book. And I love that. The one thing I love about your book is if you like to learn by examples, like the vast majority of the book is examples of before and after a copy.
It is. I also give examples though of some of the articles I've written, the 20 books to 50K.
Yeah.
There's 8 or 9 of those in there because I want people to understand. I don't want them to buy the book and think, okay, I'm going to get good at copywriting and then just use that skill on the descriptions. Because you know what? You should be using that skill on your author page where your readers can come. You know, when you put up a post talking about the new book that's coming out, use the copywriting there to spread the word. When you're sending out a newsletter to your readers, use proper copywriting, because if you do, they'll read it. If they make it all the way to the end of your newsletter, that's going to be a positive thing in their mind. The next time you send out an email blast, there's a better chance they'll open it up. And so you'll see your open rate start to climb because your newsletter is a better, more enjoyable experience. So I want people to fall in love with not just the idea of selling more of their books. I want them to become passionate about copyright. So when they get to the end of this book, the hope is that even if they're commenting on their cousin's newborn baby on Facebook, they'll use copywriting to leave their posts for the practice of the art of copywriting. And if you do that on Facebook and you watch how many people like and love your comments when you're using copywriting, the short lines, the blank lines in between, which most people don't know, but on Facebook, if you hold down the enter key or the shift key, and hit enter twice instead of just you know, hitting enter and posting it. If you hold down and hit enter twice as you're working on the post, you can put a blank line on Facebook, and that will help people engage with your content.
Yeah. It's, yeah, social media has provided a really good opportunity to practice copywriting in a way that you couldn't do in your daily life before.
Oh, absolutely. Media. We live in a great age to be an author.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I typically ask my guests, one of the questions I typically ask is like, what drew them to writing for children? But if I'd ask you, what drew you to want to become not just better at copywriting yourself, but to teach others?
I think it's because there's great satisfaction in working with authors. A woman who I created my first Facebook group, Mastering Amazon Ads, for my Mastering Amazon Ads book, February 24th of 2017. About 50 people joined on the first day because they were authors that had been asking me to write this book. So I sent out this message. I DM'd each of them on Facebook. They were author friends. I said, I've started this group. It's for my new book, Mastering Amazon Ads. If you want to be in the group and get the book as I'm writing it so that you can have this information sort of ahead of the rest of the world, you're welcome to join. But understand that the requirements are when I launch the book, you'll buy it at $9.99, which is going to be the price, and everybody was fine with that. Well, one of the women who joined the group that first week, she has a massive catalog and just wasn't doing great with marketing. She was at about $1,000 a month in revenue, in net profit from her massive catalog. And she started working, and it's hard work, Amazon ads, but she put in the time, she learned it. We, at that time, you know, I talked about copywriting, I hadn't written a copywriting book, but I gave her some pointers. She worked on that. And I told her, I said, I want you to pick one of your series and just focus all of your efforts on that. So she did. And I said, you know, in 2 or 3 months, we're going to keep talking. And then at some point I'll say, okay, go ahead and work on the next series and do it slowly, because she had so many books. I didn't want her trying to do everything for all the books. I wanted her to learn the skill, and she did. And on December 30th of that year, so one day left in the year, she sent me a message on Facebook. She had just crossed. Now, I want you to remember, in February, her January sales were $1,000, and that had been her average for the previous year. She was on pace to do $12,000 in sales as of late February.
Wow.
She sent me a message on December 30th. She had just crossed $200,000 in sales for the year. Now, $200,000 is better than $12,000. And she did it on about $80,000 in ad spend. So it wasn't all profit, but she had $120,000 left over versus she would have had $12,000. And it was because of effort and copywriting and Amazon ads that let her get from that point to, you know, having a very lucrative career as an author. And so what drives me is, I feel like I have an understanding of how I can help, and I get a lot of joy from it. And admittedly, I also make $7 when somebody buys my book. So, I want to make my living from doing this. It's just so enjoyable to see those sort of results. The woman that I talked about, the children's author, she was probably only doing 5 figures a year. I don't remember exactly, but now she's doing 6. And that's satisfying. So I'm just now this year, I'm turning my focus back to fiction. I spent 2 years just doing the nonfiction stuff. I like it. I'm still happy to answer people's questions. But now I'm dipping my toes back in. And in fact, in about 6 days, I will have finished my third novel this year. So
oh, excellent.
I've started a new fantasy series. I've finished books 1 and 2. I am within the next 6 days, so by, or 5 days, by March 16th, I plan on having written 3 books in the first 10 weeks of the year, and hope to write 10 books in 7 months. And then I'm going to study rapid release, try to learn some things about that art. And it's satisfying. So that was a long answer to your question, but I hope that explains why I enjoy doing the nonfiction portion. But again, the fiction is so much fun too.
It's fun. Of course. Of course. Well, it was a long-winded answer, but it was a thorough answer. As someone who has worked in education, not currently but before, like seeing students do well, that really is what keeps us all going.
It is true. We love to see the progress.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, before we wrap up, is there anything you would like to share that's forthcoming, or where listeners can find you and your books online?
Well, obviously I'm on Amazon, and the two nonfiction books we've been talking about are Mastering Amazon Ads, and then the other one is Mastering Amazon Descriptions. I recommend the description book first because that's a key component for doing well at ads. Mm-hmm. If you haven't fixed your descriptions before you start spending money on whether it's Amazon ads or Facebook ads or Instagram or any way that you're getting the word out about your book or even newsletter swaps, the first thing you should do is have the description as polished as possible. I also have some other books with Honorary Quarter, Finding Readers, 50-15, Making More Money, which are in nonfiction about things people don't necessarily always consider in the author business. So if your listeners are wanting to do this full time, those are some good books as well. And then, like I said, I have a Facebook group, Mastering Amazon Ads. I have another one, Mastering Amazon Descriptions. I also have Mastering Weight Loss and Author's Guide, which is a tiny group, but I needed motivation. I'm down 30 pounds, but it's easier to lose weight if you're part of a community. And so I like hanging out with authors. So I created my own community of authors who are struggling. So that's where you can find me. I don't really use a personal website or anything. I probably should, but I've got 7,000 people in the one group and about 600 in the Amazon ads group, which I just started. So there's plenty of authors for me to hang out with.
Thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us all about your books, and I hope everyone goes out and reads and learns some new stuff.
Well, thank you for having me. I very much enjoyed myself.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for listening to the Book Echoes podcast. You can find the podcast at bookechoes.com, on Apple Podcasts, or on Stitcher. And I would really appreciate it if you enjoyed the podcast to leave a review at one of those places or leave a comment on the show notes at bookechoes.com.